You're listening to the free edition of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you would like to listen to a full-length version of the podcast, as well as an additional midweek episode, please check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade to Membership Plus. Here's this week's free edition.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sweden in Focus, the Local's weekly news podcast. We're recording this episode on Thursday, the 4th of April. And this week, we're going to talk about Sweden's April Fool's tradition, whether the next Pope could be a Swede, and how the coming parliamentary vote on making it easier to change legal sex is turning into a headache for the government parties. For Membership Plus subscribers, we'll also discuss the emergence of a new political party ahead of the EU election, and what a new steel plant in northern Sweden will mean for the green transition. I'm Paul O'Mahony in Stockholm, and I'm joined today in the studio by James Savage and from Malmo by Richard Orange. Richard, how are you? How was the Easter break?
Well, it was fantastic. I mean, we had Easter lunch in the country with some friends, lots of children running around, Easter egg hunts, and an Afghan friend of ours cooked this lamb kabuli pilau, which is a sort of, I don't know, it's like a kind of rice and meat dish, but it was really, really amazing. And we had that as well as herring and princess torta and all the normal Swedish stuff. And I made hot cross buns and also picked wild garlic, which had just come up, like kind of little shoots, and made pesto with that. Delicious as always. And I spent Easter Sunday and Monday raking leaves and chopping wood and doing gardening stuff. So perfect, really. And it's great to be outside again after being cooped up all winter.
How about you, James?
I had a lovely time. I got away to the Netherlands and to England, which was fantastic, and was slightly depressed to come back to Sweden, I have to say.
Yeah, it has been a little disappointing. And according to the old Swedish proverb, there need to be 7 disappointments before spring finally comes. Hu bakslag innan det blir vår. I wonder how many we've had so far.
It feels like a lot. I'm not sure I can cope.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, that piece of old wisdom has been proved right once again this week. Nikka Luokta in Lapland on Tuesday experienced the coldest temperature recorded in Sweden in April in 33 years, and snow has caused major traffic disruptions across the country. Richard, can you take us through what's been happening on the roads?
Yeah, well, it started with an orange warning from Sweden's weather forecaster, SMHI, on Tuesday morning, predicting exactly what happened, like heavy snowfall and wind all around Gothenburg and then across Sweden to Norrköping. And they warned that it would cause major disruptions. And then from Tuesday afternoon, it really did. I think there were queues 25 kilometres long on the E4 motorway near Jönköping. Some people had to sleep in their cars overnight and were still stuck in traffic on Wednesday morning. And the head of the local rescue services said he hadn't seen anything like it since 1995. He said it was partly the fault of people who had decided to ignore the orange warning, which means you should stay off the road if you possibly can. And they sent out bulldozers to clear the snow, and the rescue services were out handing out energy bars and blankets and water. And it wasn't just that road. I mean, cars were stuck on the National Road 47, National Road 26 and National Road 50, and also on the E20 motorway. And the bridge over to Öland was also closed. And there's been a bit of criticism for the government. So the opposition Social Democrats have sort of said, you know, were they all on Easter holiday? What have they been doing? Where were the ministers when this happened? Yet another massive disaster caused by the snow. But the infrastructure minister, Anders Carlson, has kind of slightly blamed the public for going out with summer tyres on their cars, which I think was caused a lot of the jams.
Yeah, I mean, the timing wasn't great, wasn't it? Not in the middle of the Easter holidays when a lot of people were out on the roads. Back in January, more than 1,000 cars were stuck overnight on the E22 motorway, which led to a lot of complaints about the failure to clear the snow and rescue them. But something similar, if not quite as bad, happened again on Tuesday night. Why is Sweden so unprepared for this kind of thing?
I mean, I think it's a similar issue to, I mean, in over the last few years, we've seen, you know, a landslide that washed away this motorway north of Gothenburg, and another floods that sort of hollowed out underneath the rail embankment around Hudiksvall on the in the east of Sweden, and I think it's because of the warming climate, which means more precipitation, both water and snow, and Sweden's infrastructure and also rescue services and bulldozers and all that stuff, it just isn't built for it. That they're not prepared for the amount of snow that can fall nowadays with the new climate. So, I mean, presumably over the coming years, they'll just have to buy more snowplows and have a team that they can call at shorter notice to clear snow when this happens. But they're not quite prepared for it yet.
Mm. So this probably counts as the peculiarly Swedish season of vårvinter. What is vårvinter, James?
Well, it's spring-winter.
Sprinter.
Sprinter. It's this kind of season where basically it should be spring, but it feels like winter, where it goes backwards and forwards between one day it will feel like spring and the next day the roads will be covered in snow and there'll be ice and so that you're going backwards and forwards between the two seasons. Yeah, it's a very appropriate term for what we're experiencing right now, I think.
So what do you think? Was this the last of the wintry disappointments and can we now expect spring to settle for good?
Never, ever, ever take it for granted that this is the last of the wintry disappointments. I mean, I have been there at midsummer in a tent with frost on my tent. It is never over.
The voice of experience. What do you think, Richard? Is it over?
I reckon we've had our required crew buckslog. So I think bring on spring, bring on summer.
It's very optimistic of you.
Yeah, bring it on. Thanks for that both. So our sponsor again this week is Stockholm's Akademiska Forum, which produces the excellent podcast Stockholm is a State of Minds. Every year, brilliant people from all over the world move to Stockholm and Sweden for work, studies, love, or as an accompanying partner. So if this describes you and you're curious about things like how to find a job in Sweden or why the country decided to join NATO, then you should definitely check it out. And the podcast, again, is Stockholm is a State of Minds. It's available wherever you listen to podcasts, and it's a great tool if you want to become more Swedish. Okay, time for another proverb. April, April, din dumma sill, jag kan lura dig vart jag vill. April, April, you silly herring. Like, doesn't sound great, does it? I can trick you where I want. So that's the traditional Swedish April Fool's rhyme, and Swedes do generally go quite big on April the 1st jokes, don't they? And about 10 years ago, we did too. We covered all the outlandish ideas cooked up by the Swedish newspapers in the local, and we even wrote our own spoof news stories. What do you remember of that, James? Why did it change and what's happened this year?
Well, it was a wonderful tradition. I loved it. We did some fantastic April Fools at the local. I remember one about an anti-feminist Viking collective that had been discovered in a Swedish forest, lost to society since the 1960s. That was great fun. One about Thor's actual hammer being discovered while building the Citybanan rail line in Stockholm. I mean, it was an absolute... I think that was yours, right?
I don't think it was, actually, but that was a really good
one. It was a classic. But then I think after about 2016, awareness started growing about fake news and disinformation. You know, after Brexit and Donald Trump and all of that, everyone started being a bit more nervous about spreading, you know, fake news, I suppose. Mm. And a lot of publishers decided to stop, thought that, you know, the joke was wearing a bit thin.
Yeah.
But interestingly, this year, it feels like a few, not by no means all, but a few have started again. Sud Svenskan did a really good one this year, which I think we'll get onto in a minute. So it feels like this year there's been a bit of a revival, which I think is quite nice.
Mm. So Richard, what have been some of your favourite stories from this year's crop?
I think the one that I liked the best was from a judge at the Svea Court of Appeal, which is currently housed in this beautiful, like, I don't know how you pronounce it, Wrangel Palace on Riddarholmen, which is this islet off Gamla Stan. And he posted a picture of this sort of grey industrial warehouse next to a picture of the court, which is built in 1802, and it's this beautiful palace. And I think the reason that it worked is that his comment was so deadpan. He was going, I accept that the building is old and perhaps needs more space, but I still wonder whether the proposal to demolish it and replace it with the pictures below is the right way to go. You know, it's functional, but I'm not sure about the amount of daylight. And I think it was the way he wended it from the side, you know, as if he was commenting on a discussion that was already out there.
Yeah.
That meant that he actually took quite a few people in. I don't know if you've seen, there's a Facebook page called Architecture Uprührt, which is, you know, people complaining about, you know, horrible concrete boxes being built all over Sweden. And they basically want everything to be built in this 19th century Jugend style, a bit like this palace. And anyway, I just found it amusing because he took in quite a few people. And when he sort of said, actually, you know, this is was actually a joke, they kind of went, well, you know, they probably would build that anyway. You know, I wouldn't put it past them. You know, the problem is it's not even a joke, you know, and it was just brilliant. And the other one I really liked was the Sydsvenska newspaper here in southern Sweden, like James mentioned. They claim to have found a sort of clause in the agreement Sweden made with NATO, which would mean that the island of Ven, which is between Landskrona in sort of the north of Skåne and Denmark, would have to lose 500 metres of its territory to make way for aircraft carriers to turn in the Öresund, which I thought was absolutely classic and actually quite possible almost. and I thought that was a good one. And like James said, it was the regional papers that have started doing this again. The big national papers still have a policy that this is kind of inappropriate and irresponsible in the age of fake news. But the regional ones have started doing it again.
It's interesting because Sydsvenskan is owned by Bonnier, which is one of the biggest newspaper groups in Sweden. So, and they own Dagens Nyheter as well and Expressen. So maybe. You never know. We'll see more coming up in the years ahead.
Do you think the local will start doing them again?
Oh, maybe. I sort of hope so. I mean, you know, fake news is a problem. Of course it's a problem. It's a problem that's not going away, particularly with AI and everything. But it feels to me a bit like fake stories on the 1st of April can teach us something about evaluating our sources. They sort of train our minds as readers, and I think it's quite useful. And they're fun in an age where fun is in short supply. So I think there's a good argument for bringing them back.
This next story is not a joke, but it sounds like it could be, given that Sweden is famously secular, and when it's not being secular, it's Lutheran. So the next pope could be a Swede, according to French newspaper Le Figaro. What's going on here, James? And is there a risk that this could cause Sweden to short circuit?
Well, first of all, let's say we should probably take this with a pinch of salt. But according to Le Figaro, very respected French paper with, you know, traditionally a bit more on the Catholic side of the French media, Cardinal Anders Arborelius, who is Bishop of Stockholm, is one of three leading candidates to succeed Pope Francis when eventually he either retires or dies. Now, there is obviously no vacancy right now, but they say that Anders Arborelius is in a good position because he has links to both conservative and progressive circles. So he can bridge that divide in the Catholic Church. And the fact that he's from a secular Protestant country is actually seen as a plus, according to them. But yeah, I think Swedes would absolutely blow a fuse if this happened. The country goes bananas when anyone outside of Sweden notices anything that's happening in Sweden or notices any Swedes. If Swedes become famous internationally, Swedes get massively sort of proud and interested in this fact. And so I think on the one hand, they would be delighted and just incredibly excited to have a Swede as Pope. I mean, any country would, but I think in particular Sweden. But also, Swedes are so incredibly secular. And are genuinely, I think, baffled by religion. I mean, this is a gross generalization, but Swedes as a group, all the international surveys show that Sweden has, you know, some of the most secular values in the world. So I think they would find it almost incomprehensible that this Swedish guy really sort of believed in God and was going to lead the world's Catholics. So it will be absolutely wonderful if this happened and to just see these tendencies clashing in real time.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. Before we move on, I just want to mention the next episode of Sweden in Focus Extra for Membership Plus subscribers, in which the two of you, James and Richard, discuss tipping etiquette in Sweden. Here's a short excerpt.
The etiquette has been that tipping is entirely voluntary. There is no real social pressure to tip. You may tip if you've received really good service, or you may choose not to, because the amount on the bill is supposed to cover the cost of the service. Waiting staff generally are paid according to collective bargaining agreements. So they have collectively set wages. And so tipping theoretically is not supposed to be what they live on. It's not like America where waiters live on tips. It's a different culture. And now we're moving to something else.
If you want to hear more on how much to tip in Sweden or whether you should tip at all, make sure to listen on Wednesday. So on April 17th, Sweden's parliament is due to vote on a new law which seeks to make it easier for people both to change their legal gender and to have gender corrective surgery. James, can you tell us a little bit about the law and what it proposes?
The main change is that people will be able to change legal gender without a diagnosis, without surgery, and from the age of 16 rather than 18 today.
And why is it causing such tensions within the three government parties and the Sweden Democrats?
Because, like everywhere else, trans issues are enormously divisive. They're dividing parties between parties that are opposed and parties that are in favour, but also dividing parties internally, both parties on the left and on the right. In particular, it has split the government, with the moderates and liberals technically in favour and the Sweden Democrats and Christian Democrats generally against. And the moderates and liberals are now planning to push this law through in Parliament with opposition support as a way of getting round the Sweden Democrats and the Christian Democrats. But, you know, the moderates in particular are incredibly divided on this.
Internally, yeah.
Internally. There was a report in Expressen where they tried to do soundings among moderate party MPs. And they reckoned that about 80% of moderate party MPs were opposed to this legislation. Most of them were probably going to vote with the government. The whip in the Swedish parliament is extremely strong. But nonetheless, most of them were very uneasy and coming under pressure from their local party associations to vote against it. Also, the Social Democrats are deeply divided about this. The chair of the Social Democrats' women's organisation, Annika Strandhäll, who used to be social affairs minister, she's come out against, having previously been in favour, and when she was in government, actually kind of promoting this kind of legislation. So it's incredibly divisive. And even though it looks like the legislation will go through, it could lead, to some drama before it does.
Mm. And you mentioned the Sweden Democrats. They're furious about it, aren't they? Just because the moderates, the biggest party in government, they see this as using this as a way to get around them.
Right, because ultimately, according to the coalition agreement, there's not technically anything wrong with this. The moderates and the liberals aren't breaking the coalition agreement.
Because this is an issue that's not covered in the TDOT agreement.
It's not covered in the TDOT-TOLA, which governs the coalition. Mm. But nonetheless, yes, the Sweden Democrats are very cross that the moderates are effectively going out on a limb to get around them by doing this in Parliament. They're not doing it as the government. They're doing it as a party in Parliament to try and get this legislation through. So yes, the Sweden Democrats are cross with the moderates, but the moderates are kind of cross with themselves. Mm. So it is a very, very difficult situation for the moderates. But I think this is also, you know, it's a sign that Ulf Kristersson, while, you know, he has allied with the Sweden Democrats, who are, you know, very traditionalist, very anti a lot of LGBT questions. They're very conservative on those issues. But Ulf Kristersson has always been very pro LGBTQ issues. And this is perhaps a sign that he's willing to draw a line in the sand on this and pay a political price for getting this through.
And Sweden has been on a similar trajectory on gender dysphoria and gender self-identification as many other countries. Richard, can you give us a quick breakdown of what's happened over the past decade or so?
So between about 2008 and 2018, there was this sort of really rapid change and development. I think the number of 13 to 17-year-olds born as girls who got gender dysphoria diagnoses rose by 1,500% in that decade. So there was this really rapid change. And at the time, Sweden had a very liberal approach to gender identity, not in the laws, but in the laws that they were proposing and the way that the kids team at the Karolinska Institute dealt with these cases. And when this law was first proposed in 2014, it proposed that children as young as 12 should be able to change legal gender without medical investigation. And, you know, it wanted to reduce the minimum age for medical treatment, such as hormone treatment and even surgery, from 18 to 15. So in 2014, it was even more liberal. So this law is a kind of watered down version of that law. Mm. But in 2018, just before the law was about to go through Parliament, there was this backlash with a series of programs by Uppdrag Granskning, which is this investigative unit in Swedish TV, questioning the evidence for some of these treatments and also profiling lots of several young people who regretted having received treatment, you know, similar to the high profile cases in the UK. And the Social Democrats then kind of pulled back, delayed the bill, and ordered the Swedish Board of Health and Welfare to have a look again at the evidence. And then when the Swedish Board of Health and Welfare came back, they took a much more cautious approach. And that's kind of slowed the system down. And now the bill is finally going through. So it's been delayed. This bill's been waiting to come through since, I think, 2014. And just before the 2022 general election, the Social Democrats finally sent this bill out for consultation. And now it's finally going up for a vote. So it's taken an enormous amount of time because, as James says, it's such a divisive issue.
I mean, Richard, what are the chances that the law actually gets passed?
I mean, it's very hard to say. I mean, there's a theoretical parliamentary majority in favour of it. So if all of the MPs vote according to party, then, you know, it should pass. But it's a question of whether Ulf Kristersson, the Prime Minister, holds his nerve, and also, I suppose, how much pressure the Sweden Democrats and other moderate MPs within the party who are opposed to it are willing to put on the government. So I think it's hard to know what will happen. I think it will probably pass, but who knows? There could be an upset.
Okay, so we'll find out in just under 2 weeks. That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.